and it talks about poisoning the blood. This is this kind of low thrum that's always been there, and Trump is now putting it on the national stage, giving it that platform that the far right has always wanted and was just a little bit, I think, afraid to claim. They were worried, if we say this out loud, maybe we'll lose the people. And now they're discovering that the people they want are coming to them because they are naming the F word, fascism, out loud.
Jeff Charlotte, we want to thank you for being with us, professor of English and creative writing at Dartmouth College, author of several books, including The Undertow, Seams from a Slow Civil War. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Teresaina, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura. Special thanks to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. That's right, 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you. You can always make a donation to help keep KBOO colorful, independent, and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end-of-the-year campaign, is the perfect time to contribute. Give now and help us to reach our goal of $75,000 by December 31st. Be a ray of light in your community by making your tax-deductible donation at kboo.fm/give today.
After years of great progress in reducing euthanasia rates in this country, healthy, adoptable pets are once again being killed in our nation's shelters at record levels, simply because they're homeless.
And I gotta tell you, I'm sorry, but in my 30-odd years of covering the story of overcrowding in the shelters, I have never seen anything like this.
On the next Voices for the Animals, we'll talk with Stephanie Filer of Shelter Animals Count about why our nation's animal shelters and rescues are in crisis, and talk about possible solutions to make things better for pets who find themselves homeless through no fault of their own. Join us Friday, December 22nd at 10 a.m. right here on 90.7 KBOO FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, how fentanyl and meth are contributing to hundreds of deaths in our streets. A warning from Portland police as we head into the darkest days of the year. Watch out on the roads. And an Oregon county is trying to limit large-scale farms because people nearby are worried about pollution. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 21st, 2023. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Fentanyl and meth have driven a record number of deaths among the houseless community in Multnomah County, as we just learned yesterday. Kaya Sand is the executive director of Street Roots, a newspaper that covers issues related to homelessness. Here, she announced the results of a new annual report.
In 2022, at least 315 people who are unhoused died 3 decades before their time in Multnomah County. And I want to also point out, this is not just on the streets. These are folks who are in shelters, in safe rest villages, in folks who don't have stable housing. The reason, you know, that Street Roots is so deeply involved in this is that we're committed to knowledge. We're committed to the fact that we need to confront the truth and do what we can with that truth. And through that confrontation, that's both about grieving, acknowledging, and also finding any solutions that we can find. In 2010, then Street Roots director Israel Bayer approached Dr. Paul Lewis, really pushing to have this happen. Then Multnomah County Commissioner Deborah Cafori joined up. And what followed from that was a deep commitment to this truth. And that I really have come to admire medical examiners who research, reach out to families, research, they reach out to social contacts to really understand who it is that we're losing, and so that we have this knowledge. There's things that we're able to do with this knowledge. The counties, severe weather shelters have really emerged because of tracking this, of looking at the seasons, of tracking hypothermia and hyperthermia. In 2018 was the first time we saw any deaths by fentanyl. So before that, it was always deaths by heroin. And there were 2 people that year. And to put that in perspective, Oregon is still in the lower half of states with fentanyl deaths because it hit the East Coast so much more rapidly 5 years earlier. We, by having this knowledge, by seeing it enter into the deaths that we are dealing with, we know that these deaths are actually preventable. I bring up naloxone because I hope everyone knows that in this state you don't need a prescription to go into a pharmacy, buy naloxone. We have naloxone we distribute here thanks to our vendor program manager, Carly Ng, who's really fought to make it accessible to anyone who comes in. And fentanyl deaths are preventable if people don't have to die hiding. And I think that's a really important piece of that. And I think it's really important for us to pause with the gravity of this information and really recognize that it's a collective grief. It's an indictment on an entire nation that is deeply unequal, that has a frayed, if not missing, social safety net. This is what we are dealing with. Poverty is a leading cause of death in this nation. And we grieve, but then the darkest day of the year is followed by days that get lighter. Then we also solve. And those are the 2 pieces I really wanted to put forward, is that we take both at once, right? Grief and knowledge can come together.
That was Kaya San, the executive director of Street Roots, the newspaper that covers the houseless community. Also speaking out about the record number of deaths in this new report is Multnomah County Deputy Health Officer Dr. Paul Lewis.
This report is full of a lot of numbers, a lot of careful analysis. I always like to point out that we know it's an underestimate, maybe even a big underestimate, because it's hard to be certain that someone's living without adequate shelter. But every one of these persons is a brother, a sister, a mother, and father. And there's some great reporting in the report that you have with some of those stories, which I think illustrate how close all of us are to suffering what some of these people did. My prepared remarks were supposed to include a lot of statistics, but I didn't think that would really go over too well. A little bit more about the origin story. Maybe in a more optimistic time in the aughts, there was an organization called Coalition for a Livable Future, and they held a big annual conference hosted by PSU. And it was after I gave a talk there that I was confronted by Mr. Israel Bear and challenged to look into this topic. And I love a challenge. And then Commissioner Kafouri encouraged us to look into this. It was a real shoestring operation. It's much more sophisticated now. And at the time, and as the years went by and the numbers crept up, we worried, oh my God, it's a death every week. And then it was every 2 weeks. And you don't have to be a mathematician to know we're approaching it every day now. We're in the 300s now. Point number one, it's too many deaths. Lots of statistics in there, all the different breakdowns. Average age was 49. The hospitalized people are a little bit older, in the 50s. They're too young. It's far less than anticipated life expectancy in the United States. People are dying too young. And then the causes of death are just, for someone like me, one of my specialties is preventive medicine. These are preventable deaths. Most of them are, or the majority are, nearly half are unintentional, right? Not planning on dying that day, but they did. And then others are quite disheartening, are deaths of violence, interpersonal violence. Our epidemiologists and statisticians estimate that there's more than a 30-time greater rate of homicide deaths among people experiencing homelessness than the general population. I hesitate to use an exact number, but it's pushing a quarter of the homicides in 2022 were in people experiencing houselessness. So that's completely out of control. And then one of the things I get to do as part of this is I read the reports that the medical examiners group puts together every year. I wish I could delegate that. No one else wants to do it. It's a very traumatizing experience to read about the folks who died under these circumstances, often without shelter, companionship, etc. Certainly not the way any of us hope that our final days go.
Multnomah County's Dr. Paul Lewis. And with this being the darkest day of the year, we also have a warning from Portland Police. Here's Sergeant Ty Engstrom.
I'm a sergeant with Portland Police Bureau's Traffic Division, and I wanted to share a little bit with you about traffic-related matters, which have unfortunately played a significant role in this report that has been written and in what is happening on our roadways with the houseless community and those who are experiencing houselessness. Back in April of 2022, we wanted to highlight one of the crashes that took place on Powell Boulevard. Later in the evening, Angela Boyd was hit and killed. Her family is here with us. I wanted to share a little bit of some updates about that case because that was a hit and run case where someone actually hit her and then pulled off into a parking lot and then subsequently took off and never came back. So I do have some updates on that crash that I wanted to share and put out a vehicle description as well. Before I go on to that, there was also another person who came into the crime scene, went through police barricades, who was also intoxicated as we were investigating that crash that night. Lots of people on the roadways that are driving under the influence of intoxicants. But the vehicle that was involved in that crash was a dark gray Subaru Crosstrek with oversized wheels, black rims, and it was gray in color, left some gray paint chips there at the crime scene, had tinted windows. We weren't able to get close enough view for the license plate, but we do have that vehicle on camera. So the family has also expressed to me today that they want to offer up a monetary reward to anybody who provides information to Crime Stoppers that helps lead to the arrest and prosecution of this driver. So please contact our Crime Stoppers hotline for that or go onto the city's website where you can file a tip on that. Now, over the last 3 years, unfortunately, we have experienced almost the same number of traffic fatalities on our roadways consecutively. In 2022, we had 67 total fatalities, 2021, 69 total fatalities, and this year we're again at 67 and still have a week and a half to go to the end of the year. Of those crashes, in 22, 17 of them were fatal hit and run crashes, where the operator did not stick around and fled the scene. In 2021, 13 of them were hit and run fatalities, and this year, so far, 7 of them are hit and run fatalities. One more number I wanted to share with you for each of those 3 years is the number of people experiencing houselessness that was killed in a traffic fatality. In 2021, 23 people died. Again, that was 69 total, and 23 of them were people experiencing houselessness. In 2022, 67 total, 15 of them were people experiencing houselessness. And this year so far, of the 67 total, 11 are experiencing or were experiencing houselessness. There's a lot of different reasons why those crashes take place. Sometimes the motorist is at fault. Sometimes a pedestrian is not where they're supposed to be, or a cyclist. There's lots of different factors that go into these investigations. As a crash team sergeant, my job is to go out there with my team at all hours of the day and night and put together the best package we possibly can for the families and victims of these individuals, to paint a picture, to fill in the gaps, put the puzzle together, and trying to figure out exactly what happened. And after going to hundreds of fatal crashes and seeing all types of scenarios, what I want to express to you today is that we all use these roadways together, and we have to share them appropriately, and we have to drive appropriately and at reasonable speeds, and we have to be vigilant. Now, often I'm riding a motorcycle at work. I'm an avid cyclist. I like to go jogging. I'm using these roadways in a lot of different manners. And I do so with the thought of something's gonna happen right up here. And if I anticipate that, I can act appropriately and maybe prevent a little bit of that. and anticipate the person cutting me off or the person pulling out in front of me or the person standing where they're not supposed to. Be visible, be vigilant, be seen. Wear appropriate clothing if you're out there biking and riding. One of the other fatals that we had a couple years ago down on Water Avenue, many of you might remember, involved a cyclist. And oftentimes as cyclists and runners, we may think we are more visible than we actually are. And we need to assume that people aren't seeing us. And we need to be as visible as we possibly can. And if you're operating a motor vehicle, you need to act as if someone's going to step in front of you at any given moment. We have very tight streets. Not all of them are well lit. We have lots of street parking that people can step out from between cars. Please be safe. Be vigilant. And as we go into these darkest days of the year, please be careful, be safe, and use our roadways appropriately.
Pollution concerns are prompting Linn County, Oregon, to limit large-scale farms. Eric Tegedoff reports, big farm operations have raised concerns about nearby public health impacts across the country.
An Oregon county has enacted new restrictions on large-scale agriculture operations. Linn County commissioners approved a one-mile setback rule from property lines for confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. Small farmers in the county have celebrated the new rule as a win. Kendra Kimbaroskis is a farmer in CO who says CAFOs can't help but have impacts on neighbors.
Mega livestock operations come with a bunch of problems, including air pollution, water pollution, traffic, noise. And the issue isn't so much the livestock operation itself, it's the scale of the livestock operation.
During the legislative session this year, Oregon lawmakers passed Senate Bill 85, which gives counties authority over the siting of large-scale ag operations. Opponents of the Linn County rule called it a ban on new livestock farms. According to the county, the setback rule limits the number of properties that could have CAFOs to 89. Kimbaroskis says the rule makes sense for locals.
A lot of these large-scale industrial farms are not local farmers. What we were experiencing in Linn County is these out-of-state corporations that were coming into our communities, buying up our farmland, and taking our water.
Kimbaroskis notes that others could follow Linn County's lead.
Certainly, other counties in other areas are going to have to put something in place that works for their residents, but we think this is a model that can be looked at, and we think that adding more local control to communities is a good thing.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by the end of the year. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At six, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather becoming cloudy with occasional rain, a low around 40. Tomorrow's weather, steady rain in the morning, showers continue into the afternoon, a high reaching 47. Today in history, on this date in 1968, Apollo 8, the first manned mission to the moon, successfully launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida. The quote of the day is from astronaut William Anders. We came all this way to explore the moon, and the most important thing is that we discovered the Earth. Congressman Kevin McCarthy submits his formal resignation. People in politics and the law assess what it means that Donald Trump may be struck from the Colorado primary ballot. And border security funding remains stalled. With more in the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2023 Talks.
I hereby submit my resignation, effective on December 31st, 2023, as United States Representative of the 20th District of California.
Former Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy submitted his official letter of resignation on Wednesday, which was read on the floor. Losing the gavel after a tumultuous 9 months, McCarthy is leaving politics and joining a big group of retirees. The reasons 7 senators and more than 30 House members give for exiting include Washington's dysfunction and polarization. Even though it cost him the speakership, McCarthy says he would always choose to make a deal with Democrats to prevent a government shutdown.
Do not be fearful. If you believe your philosophy brings people more freedom, do not be fearful that you could lose your job over it.
As expected, former President Donald Trump is appealing the ruling of Colorado Supreme Court decision removing him from the state's primary ballot. If the U.S. Supreme Court hears the case, it could impact similar lawsuits in 14 other states. David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research is among those praising Colorado Supreme Court for judging the case on the law, not the possible political fallout.
It was unprecedented that we had a president who engaged in the behavior that he did on and before January 6th. And that's where all of this is coming from. It comes from his behavior, not from the courts having to address that behavior in some way.
To give the high court time, the Colorado justices put a hold on their ruling until January 4th, one day before the Secretary of State must certify primary ballots. Until then, Trump is still on the list of candidates. While speaking with reporters, President Joe Biden declined to comment on the case itself, noting the law must take its course. But Biden is clear in saying he thinks Trump is an insurrectionist.
He saw it all. Now, whether the 14th Amendment applies, I'll let the court make that decision. But he certainly supported an insurrection. No question about it.
A bit more humanitarian aid is getting into Gaza. The U.S. has worked to get Kerem Shalom, a crossing between Israel and Gaza, open. This comes despite U.S. opposition to United Nations resolution for a humanitarian ceasefire. State Department spokesperson Matt Miller says while opening the crossing is beneficial, the need is profound.
We will continue to work closely with the governments of Israel, Egypt, and partner countries in the region to further increase the humanitarian assistance flowing into Gaza to address the needs of the Palestinian people.
The UN is criticizing Israel for insisting that aid trucks be unloaded and the supplies loaded back on separate vehicles. Talks over getting more hostages released are also going slow. Senate leadership says the body may not be able to reach an agreement on border policy or funding before their holiday break. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says some issues have been resolved while others are still under discussion.
Border security policy is complex.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
A Washington State man is recognized for his work helping people with Parkinson's through hiking. As Eric Tegedoff reports, Bill Meyer took his first hike to help relieve his own Parkinson's disease symptoms in 2016.
A prestigious award for volunteerism has been given to the founder of an organization that helps people with Parkinson's disease enjoy the great outdoors through hiking. Bill Meyer is the recipient of the 2023 Washington Andrus Award for Community Service, given by AARP Washington. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2009. In 2016, Meyer decided to go on a hike, inspiring the founding of Pass to Pass.
The recognition is great. We've come a long ways in 9 years, but the success of Pass to Pass doesn't depend just on me. We're an all-volunteer organization.
Pass to Pass has 6 chapters that started by organizing multi-day hikes. The trips rely on a variety of supporters, including llamas to carry hiking gear. More than 21,000 people in Washington State have been diagnosed with Parkinson's, according to the Parkinson's Foundation. Meyer says last year, Pass to Pass started organizing day trips as well.
We realize that more people want to do day hikes than they do multi-day hikes, or they may not be capable of multi-day hikes. So we want them out exercising, and it minimizes the symptoms of Parkinson's the more exercise you get.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Alzheimer's Association is warning us about wandering adults during the holidays. Mark Moran has more in the story.
The group holds educational seminars online this month and next, focusing on topics for families struggling with all forms of dementia. The series teaches people how to identify symptoms of dementia by decoding behavioral messages the affected person displays, noticing common behavior triggers, and learning strategies to help intervene in some of the most common behavioral challenges of Alzheimer's disease. Jessica Duncan says caregivers notice more people with Alzheimer's wandering during the holidays, leaving the house without anyone's knowledge, for example.
Or it could be someone that's driving and can't remember how to go to the next stop. There are all kinds of different ways that wandering can happen with a dementia loved one or a memory impairment.
More than 6 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease. Duncan says workshops are designed to help family members learn specific facts about the disease. It should equip them to sort out the various opinions and hearsay about what happens to people with dementia.
People always ask me about, or how do I have this conversation with different family dynamics? We kind of touch on that a bit, but fact is going to be the biggest part of what we need to make a diary about or what we need to make a plan for.
This is Mark Moran.
Medicare is expanding some mental health options starting in the new year. Suzanne Potter reports.
Right now, people on Medicare who want to see a therapist often wait up to 6 months for an appointment, but relief is on the way. Starting January 1st, licensed marriage and family therapists, known as LMFTs, will be able to accept Medicare insurance. Joy Alafia is executive director of California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists, which represents 36,000 LMFTs.
About 30% of people with Medicare insurance do live with a mental illness, and only about 15% receive treatment as of 2021. So this is really a need that exists. Wait times are extremely long, and this will help address that.
LMFTs can help people who may be lonely and isolated battle anxiety, depression, addiction, mood disorders, stress, or trauma. To set up an appointment, people can check with their Medicare provider. LMFT Bindu Karana Brown oversees a crisis unit for adults with serious mental illness, as well as a community mobile response team at Momentum for Health in San Jose. She says the additional providers will be able to help with immediate mental health needs.
When somebody finally makes that choice that I want to get help, they can easily be deterred from seeking treatment if there's nobody available. And so because there were fewer providers able to be on Medicare reimbursement, it limited just the amount of people who were educated and qualified to help people in need.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
A boarding school commission bill is waiting for action in the U.S. House, and an indigenous workshop near the North Pole is busy making artistic holiday gifts. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
The National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition is continuing to call on U.S. lawmakers to create a commission to research and bring to light the troubled history of U.S. Indian boarding schools. Legislation has been introduced and passed in a Senate committee and is waiting for House action, says the coalition's CEO, Deborah Parker.
It's much needed to help us tell the story, help us understand what happened to our Native American children in U.S. boarding schools. And we deserve, America deserves, not only Native Americans, but students, but people, any human being who is living today deserves to understand the truth about what happened in the United States.
Parker says they're seeking records from not only the government, but from churches.
We know these schools, the churches, religious institutions took amazing records. So where are they? And we know parents are still looking for children to this day, their relatives who never came home. We're trying to help families locate their loved ones.
Parker was an attendee at the White House Tribal Nation Summit held this month in Washington, D.C., where Vice President Kamala Harris said she's committed, along with President Joe Biden, to speaking truth about the horrors of Indian boarding schools and says they're committed to efforts to heal intergenerational trauma. According to folklore, Santa has a workshop in the Arctic, but so do the indigenous people who live in Alaska's northernmost community. As Emily Schwing reports, Inupiat artists and creators have been making jewelry and tools essential to their life near the North Pole for generations.
Inside the traditional room at the Inupiat Heritage Center in the heart of Utqiagvik, industrial tools rumble, buzz, and whir.
I mean, yeah, this whole place is so, it's so useful for everybody. This is called a traditional room for a purpose.
James Putkatuk sits hunched over a workbench. He learned to make jewelry with natural materials from his father.
Oh, this is a grizzly bear claw, and I'm attaching a walrus tusk ivory on top of it so I can make a figurine head.
Skin sewers and whaling crews also come here to build the boats for the community's spring and fall whale hunts. Colleen Lehman says it's one of the few spaces large enough to build an umiak. She was the director of the Inupiat Heritage Center for nearly half a decade.
A skin boat is a large boat that needs to be created in a large enough space so that once the skins are sewed together, those skins are draped over that wooden frame.
In rural Alaska, large workspaces are hard to come by, and so are heavy and expensive industrial tools. But they're required for work that happens here. Richard Tulloch carves handles from caribou antler for his round-bladed ulus. It's a traditional knife found in most Alaska Native households.
Piece of equipment for our people that's been around for thousands of years. And I'm glad to continue this. I am. I really am.
I'm Emily Schwing in Utqiagvik.
You're listening to an end-of-year campaign edition of the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, December 21st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Tegadoff, Eric Galatis, Mark Moran, and Suzanne Potter. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings.
A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year campaign, so now's a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth, up next.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. A victory of words at Dubai, the unfolding crisis around USAID to Ukraine, and Europe is moving farther to the right on energy and immigration. A victory of words at Dubai. While environment ministers and other officials from over 200 countries were falling all over themselves with congratulations on the COP28 climate deal, objective observers came away with very different feelings. Fossil fuels will not be phased out. They will be transitioned